From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, after 20 years, the governor and legislature may get a pay raise. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on GOP leader Flanagan being reelected, but this time as minority leader in the state Senate. And we'll sit down with New York State DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos, who's leaving his post. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. It's been 20 years since the governor and the legislature in New York received a pay raise. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, that might change in January. A panel formed to determine future pay for lawmakers is holding hearings and will make a recommendation by December 10th.
Since 1998, there's been no change to the base pay of $79,500 per year for senators and assembly members, although many make several thousand dollars more a year in stipends for leadership posts or for chairing committees. They also receive $174 to cover expenses every day that they are in Albany on business. The governor is paid $179,000 a year, and agency commissioners make less than $150,000. During the past two decades, many state lawmakers have been indicted, convicted of crimes, and in some cases imprisoned, making it politically difficult to justify raises. The latest commission to examine the compensation rates may change that. It's chaired by two current and two former New York State and New York City controllers. City Controller Scott Stringer told the other commissioners that the panel is looking at various criteria for raising salaries, including the rate of inflation over the past 20 years and some other less common factors.
If pay increase at the rate of inflation, it would be up 54% or $121,000. If pay increased at a rate of state spending growth, that would be up 83% or $145,000. If pay increased at a rate of private sector pay growth in the legal field, roughly doubled in the last 20 years, or $160,000.
Many state senators and assembly members are attorneys. The state's chief judge, Janet DeFiore, was to have led the panel, but she recused herself, saying it would be a conflict of interest to decide on a salary increase for herself. Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group has done an analysis of the pay for New York's elected officials compared to other states, and it finds New York already has the third highest paid governor and legislature after California and Pennsylvania.
Despite the fact they haven't had a pay raise in 20 years, relative to their colleagues across the country, they're doing rather well.
NYPERG does not take a position on whether lawmakers should get a pay raise, and Horner says it's true that downstate New York has a high cost of living, but he says there needs to be an objective, nonpartisan commission free of political appointees to determine what the compensation rate should be.
We think adequate compensation should be developed, and we don't think it should be some sort of political football between the executive and the legislature over some deal. And that's historically the way it's worked out. We don't think that's right. It's not right to the individual lawmakers. Sometimes the salary should go up. Sometimes they should go down, depending on what's happening in the economy. And there are the legislatures that have done that, have lowered their salaries because of what's happening. That does not happen in New York, but 20 years is a long time. I think anyone would agree with that.
The 1998 pay hike came after then-Governor George Pataki reached a deal with the legislature to expand charter schools. A pay raise commission created in 2016 failed to make any salary recommendations after appointees of Governor Cuomo bickered with other members of the commission. The commission will hold two public hearings, one in Albany on November 28th and one in Manhattan on November 30th. If the pay commission does decide by December 10th that elected officials and judges in New York deserve a raise, the decision does not need to be ratified by the legislature. It would automatically take effect beginning in 2019. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, the GOP leader of the Senate, John Flanagan, reelected, this time as minority leader of the state Senate. Apparently, he has not been blamed for the loss.
Well, you stick with the one who brung you. And I think the Republicans like Flanagan. I think he's regarded as a reasonable leader. However, they really got drubbed. And one of the reasons so many of the Republican senators were dropping out this year is they all saw it coming. Look, the Republicans will probably never get back into power again in New York State. Why? Because they've survived by gerrymandering their districts. Look, there are so many more Democrats in the state that it doesn't make any sense. You have an overwhelming majority in the state assembly. So how could that be? Now, do the assemblymen do the gerrymander for themselves? Of course they do. But there just are a lot more Democrats. So the way that the Republicans have always survived is they go to the computer and say, oh, great computer, draw me districts where we can't lose. But now they have. Now, the gerrymander comes out of the census, and the census is about to be taken. There'll be another redistricting. There has to be. And the Democrats, who are now controlling the Senate and the Assembly, will redistrict themselves more in tune with their own needs. Now, is it always healthy? No, it isn't. On the other hand, it is sure to be more reflective of Democrats and Republicans in the state.
Alan, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to push back against critics of the Amazon deal for Long Island City, New York. In an op-ed, he even went after the press, including the New York Post and the New York Times, specifically the New York Times. He said they're hypocrites because they get tax breaks, too.
Well, look, I have never seen this governor as ferocious about anything as defending himself on the Amazon deal. He's doing it because they've given away a lot of resources. He knows it. You know, he's being ferociously attacked by people like the Times and Michael Gianaris and some others who are saying we have needs of this city, and to give away all of those resources. Now, he's claiming he's not giving anything away, that the city will make money, that the state will make money as a result of these 26,000 people coming in. But I got to tell you, housing stock in New York City is rare to begin with. This is going to make it rare. I mean, if you're a high-priced professional and you come in, you're probably not going to live in Long Island City. You probably want to live across the river in Manhattan, and many of them will, where rents are through the roof already. You can imagine, because the landlords will see it coming and they'll raise the rates. So housing for the middle class and for the people who can afford it the least will be severely hit.
Another leader that's sticking around is the GOP leader, Ed Cox. In fact, he said that he will even probably run for another term.
You know, I know him quite well. I've always liked him. I don't always like what he stands for. He has stood behind Donald Trump. And he is Dick Nixon's son-in-law, which gives him royal status in the Republican Party. He's very, very sharp. He's very smart. And while I never like to tell anybody else what they should do, the Republicans are going to do the right thing by keeping Ed Cox and not bringing somebody in who doesn't have nearly his acumen or ability.
You spoke with the head of NYPIRG. That's the New York Public Interest Research Group. That's Blair Horner. And he, always the optimist, says with a full Democratic legislature, a lot of things should get done, including possibly ethics reform.
Well, he and I agree on one thing, and that is that the Democrats in the Assembly who have been passing ethics reform, knowing full well that the Senate, Republicans in the Senate, wouldn't go for it, you got to worry about them a little bit because they got here under the old rules. So do you want to change campaign finance and other things so that more people have a ability to kick them out and to run against them? We saw what happened with Octavio Cortez and Joe Crowley. That's just a little hint of what could happen. So I want to know. I'm not from Missouri, but I'd like to be, and I want somebody to show me, state, that they're going to really do that, or they're going to fool around and hedge around and find a way not to do ethics reform.
you had another conversation with the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, and part of that conversation centered around the rumored presidential run and the idea that New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, also a Democrat, facing off against Governor Cuomo since she's made statements that she's considering a run.
Well, you know, I've had some fun with this one, because I always quote the oft-told joke that the most dangerous place to be is between Chuck Schumer and a microphone. I told him that, and then I said, and there are those who think that the worst place to be is between you and the presidency. And here's Gillibrand, a New York Stater. You can't have two running for president. She actually, this is not what I said to the governor, but she comes up with higher possibilities when the pundits are listing who's going to run. She's always near the top of the list, or at least in the middle of the list, whereas Cuomo is nowhere to be found. On the other hand, you know, Cuomo is a fierce competitor. When I asked him about him and Gillibrand, he said, oh, no, we're very good friends, and what do you think he's going to say? But I'd like to be the fly on the wall when that one all comes down.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Senior-level officials from the Department of Defense were in Newburgh this week, where they held a public forum on the PFOS water contamination. It was the first time since the crisis took hold more than 2 years ago that DOD officials met publicly with residents who say they were hoping for more concrete action. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
PFOS contamination was found in Newburgh's main drinking water source, Washington Lake, in 2016. That August, New York State designated Stewart Air National Guard Base a Superfund site after finding the source of PFOS contamination was the historic use of firefighting foam at the base. Some of the highest concentrations of PFOS emanate from outfalls at the base. Robert McMahon is Assistant Secretary of Defense for Sustainment. He'd been on the job 3 weeks before touching down in Newburgh November 15th to listen to the community's concerns.
We expected to, many of the questions that we heard today, we expected to hear the concern and the frustration we expected to hear. Could we have done a better job communicating? We always can do a better job communicating. And I think that reinforced for all of us how important it is to engage with the community, to talk with the community, and most importantly, to give the community a voice back to us, which is why this Restoration Advisory Board is so important to us.
McMahon says the community will decide the makeup of the board and how often it meets. McMahon says such boards generally meet monthly, with DOD officials participating at least twice a year. McMahon was in Newburgh with Assistant Secretary of Air Force for Installations, Environment, and Energy, John Henderson. They toured the base in the morning, then held a closed-door meeting with a number of local officials, including Newburgh City Manager Michael Caravino. In August, the city filed a federal lawsuit against a number of parties, including the Air Force, to stop PFOS contamination of the city's water supply.
There was some discussion about litigation, especially as a boundary from getting into greater details. And the Department of Defense is well aware of the city's action, as is the state of New York. We are very surprised that the state environmental New York State DEC, as well as the New York Department of Health, was not in the room, was not at the meeting.
A Stewart Air National Guard spokeswoman says the state DEC and DOH were invited to the closed-door session at the Newburgh Armory Unity Center, hosted by Orange County. DEC spokeswoman Erica Ringwald.
The State Departments of Environmental Conservation and Health were not invited to attend the closed-door meeting held by the Department of Defense and the Air Force. But state representatives did attend the DOD's public meeting to hear their plans to clean up their mess. New York continues to demand that the DOD step up and commit to concrete actions to address PFAS contamination from the Stewart Air National Guard base.
Invites weren't the only source of contention. The public forum that followed the closed-door session was held in the afternoon, and several chairs sat empty. Many of those who did attend said they just heard about the forum a day or two earlier, and by word of mouth. An Air Force spokesman says the last-minute trip occurred because McMahon felt it was important to visit Newburgh, and the visit worked well with a scheduled trip to a base in New Jersey. Dan Shapley is Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper.
I think that this would have been an absolutely perfect meeting 2.5 years ago, and they have now a very high level of skepticism that they need to get over with this community and with us and everyone involved because they've been absent.
Shapley says the formation of a restoration advisory board, along with the visit from high-level officials, is positive, but the test will be what actions follow.
And what we did still hear, dismayingly, was excuses about bureaucracy, coming to agreements with different landowners and owners and agencies to take action. That's not what we need to hear now. We need to hear, on this date, we're going to take action.
Meantime, McMahon says his department is working through CERCLA to address PFOS contamination. CERCLA stands for the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, known as Superfund.
There have been challenges with Stewart because of the fact that it's an Air National Guard base, that it is under different authorities than our active duty bases, which has made this even more complicated. So we wanted to come up here and ensure that the community knew, first of all, that we understood and that this is a long-term effort on our part. We wanted to hear what some of those concerns were, but also communicate that we're with them for the long haul.
New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer says the meeting was scheduled after he met with the Air Force Secretary. In June, New York State sued 6 manufacturers of hazardous firefighting foam that contained PFOA and/or PFOS. The lawsuit alleges that the foams used at military and civilian airports caused widespread contamination, as in the case of Newburgh.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos is leaving his post. First appointed by Governor Cuomo in 2015, Sagos previously served as Deputy Secretary for the Environment for the governor. Sagos is stepping aside at a critical time for environmental issues in New York. Sagos, who says he will remain in office for the next couple of months, spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard about his time as commissioner.
I think in the last three, since I've been commissioner, some of the things that we've been able to accomplish, getting brownfields reauthorized, brownfields tax credits reauthorized, Superfund reauthorized, putting a grant program which didn't exist into water infrastructure, $2.5 billion now is flowing. Didn't exist 8 years ago, and now it does. Environmental Protection Fund, from I mentioned, $134 million, now it's $300 million a year. Every dollar that goes out results in $7 of economic activity, and it's really improving the state. Our parks, 8 years ago, were in verge of being shut. Now we're record visitation in our parks and DEC facilities. And I've prided myself since day one on leading from the front. So really going down, spending time with staff and energizing staff, engaging our staff statewide. And I'll tell you that the morale within the agency is really, really strong right now and makes me feel really good about the next 4 years.
You're leaving in the next 2-3 months.
Sure.
But are we confident that we'll see a maximum contaminant level for PFAS chemicals before you exit the office?
Well, as you know, the Commissioner of Health said that we'd be meeting, reconvening the Drinking Water Quality Council sometime late November, early December. I'm confident that's going to happen. And the intent of the law was clear, convene the council and set the MCL level. So I'm confident that'll happen.
We have now filtration systems installed in the water supplies in Hoosick Falls, which was done a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and in Newburgh more recently.
Right.
Is DEC confident that those filtration systems will filter not only PFOA, but other PFAS chemicals that we may not know as much about.
I'm 100% clear and certain that those systems will work for the PFAS, both the long chain and the short chains. The same systems as carbon treatment systems have been put in place elsewhere in the country. They're proven to work. Whenever we install a system, we need to run it at scale, right? Run the actual water through the actual system that we built to make sure it's working. It worked very well in Hoosick Falls. We intend to test the Lake Washington water down in Newburgh to make sure that water runs through the system we designed and produces clean PFOA-free water.
With regards to climate issues and energy and climate change, how is New York positioned for, after you leave the office, to continue advancing on clean energy goals and reduce the carbon footprint of the state?
Well, it's our top priority, right? When you're faced with the specter of potential irreversible damage done to our climate, you read the IPCC report about 2030 being that year. If we don't make progress by 2030, we're going to see some real problems. I'll tell you what, we're already seeing real problems. And we saw it with Superstorm Sandy. We saw it with the hurricanes that hit New York. We're seeing it with the fires out in California. We've got to get on top of this. Luckily, you have the pullback at the federal level, which is unacceptable and it's terrible. But I think luckily now, here in New York, we've made these investments over the span of 8 years, put in place new policies, targets, right, to reach that are very ambitious. We want to get at least half of our energy from clean energy by 2030, at least half. We want to reduce carbon emissions by 2030 by 40%. And once we hit 2050, by 80%, we're on a pathway to put out 100% clean energy study. So that's something that we have to get to. Look, I think we're very well positioned right now. It's not acceptable when you have the federal government pulling back on such an existential question, and you're leaving it to the states to come up with. But between New York, the other regional greenhouse gas states, 12 states in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, and you have California and many other states, and frankly, many other nations that are doing this, I'm optimistic we'll make some changes and changes for the better. We honestly need the federal government to step up and not mess with this.
So you have a couple of months left. What are you looking forward to taking on before you leave? And then what's next for you?
Well, this is a busy, really busy time of the year, right? Election's now behind us. The governor has been clear about the environment really over the last two terms, and I expect him to put that as one of his top priorities moving forward. We're working on the state of the state and the budget right now. I won't give you any previews as to where we're going, other than to say that we intend to push the environment and energy issues as top priorities. We have to do it. It's good for the state's economy to do that. It's long-term sustainability. It's good for our health to do that, and we want to lead. We want to be leading in New York. We don't want to be in the position of playing catch-up. My next steps, I guess we'll see, right? I intend to step down, leave the agency in a better place, leave the governor with the notion that the environment is in good hands, that we've done enormous good over the last few years, ultimately find the right replacement. And then I may be stepping down, but I'm not stepping out of the fight. I intend to remain in this field until I retire, and that hopefully is many, many years from now.
That's New York State DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1847. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.